Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talked to Kayla Weiler, who has been a guest previously on both the Politicast and in the proverbial pages of the Guelph Politico site. She is the outgoing Vice President External of the Central Students Association at the University of Guelph. But before she goes on to bigger and better things with the Canadian Federation of Students in Toronto, she stopped by CFRU one last time to talk about her tenure at the CSA and how things changed for her and her colleagues over the last 2 years since she took office. Comments on the politics of campus life is the topic of this edition of the Guelph Politicast. So way back in episode number 74, Kayla Weiler made her first appearance on the Guelph Politicast along with fellow incoming VPs Emily Vance and Becca Chasick. They were the first elected leaders of the new reorganized CSA executive team at the time, and they were ready to roll up their sleeves and tackle the biggest issues facing students, which included rising tuition rates and mental health issues on campus. That summer, the CSA had to prepare to inform students on the route realignment of Guelph Transit, a service that so many at the U of G depend on, and they also had to oversee the renovations of the second floor club space in the UC, which was controversial in its own way. Of course, these were probably the halcyon days of the recent class of CSA executives. Last June, when the Ford government was elected to office in Ontario, it was only a matter of time before the CSA was going to have to find their activist instincts again. And since dealing with the provincial government is technically the VP External's portfolio, it was going to be Weiler who would have to lead the proverbial charge. The hammer fell this past January. There was the announced 10% tuition cut that would blow a hole worth tens of millions of dollars in the university budget. And then for the coup de grace, there was the Student Choice Initiative, which would allow undergrad students to opt out of non-essential services, almost all of which are administered by the CSA and actually include the CSA itself, the governing body for those undergrads at the University of Guelph. So what a difference a few years make, I guess. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, I'll recap these last couple of tumultuous years with Weiler and ask her about what she thinks the next few years might look like for post-secondary students. We'll also talk about the good and the bad about the Central Student Association and how she thinks she's left her mark with the organization. And we also talk about her efforts to get students to organize and defend something they may not necessarily understand. And we talk about how she feels now that it's all over, what she'll be doing next, and what she'll be taking with her in terms of her U of G experience and her experience here with student governance. So I caught up with Kayla Weiler a couple of weeks ago in studio. Kayla Weiler, thank you so much for joining me again.
Thanks.
For the last time.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. It does seem like yesterday that you and Becca and Emily were all here. It was like about this time of year, I mean, because that's usually when the changeover happens. And it's, you know, just a reminder, time flies.
Oh, yeah. Time definitely flies, especially when you're at the CSA. So, yeah.
It's a CSA-related phenomenon. So, you know, how do you feel now that it's, you know, sort of coming to an end? It's, you know, two very busy years and some significant changes in right in the middle there with who's calling the shots now.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this a little bit, like, on my, like, walk to school every day, is that it's funny to think that, like, when I started on this campus in fall 2013, and if you told first year, like, if I told my first year self that, like, I was going to be, you know, an executive of the student union, I don't think I would have believed you. Mm. I was, like, a, you know, a very, like, I was involved through the Oncommunist League, like, in my first year from the very beginning, and I was involved in, like, CSA election campaigns even in my first year. So it's interesting to see that, like, I'm now, like, I had now done 2 years at the CSA, let alone, like, never thought I would even do one, but now I've done two. So it's very interesting. I think this, at this time of the year, last year, I would have said, oh, I'm not ready to leave. Mm. And that's, like, part of the main reason why I ran again.
Right.
But now I think, like, I am ready to leave. Like, I've done what I could. And I've even noticed that, like, the students who are starting their first year next year, the youngest they could be is born in 2000. Mm. And I'm not old. Like, I'm 23. But I am, like, five, almost 6 years older than these students coming right. in. So it's always great to have, like, fresh people, new perspectives, and just new creative ideas. Because I think if a CSA, like, if you could do 3 terms at the CSA, I think you would see a lot of the same events and a lot of the same kind of actions, and it gets kind of stale, especially this time when you need to, like, continue to escalate pressure upon the government.
Right. I was going to get into that later, but since you mentioned the government, I mean, I imagine your job looks very different now, and the person who will be taking over your job, for them, it's a very different situation they were walking into than when you walked into the job 2 years ago.
Yes. So when I first started, like, it was the first year of the restructure mm-hmm. of the CSA. And it was interesting because I voted against the restructure. And so then I was now working in a restructure that I didn't believe in. So that was, like, a weird change for me. But for the new executives coming in, they're going to have the difficult task of taking on the government, but also with, like, limited funding as well. Mm. Because, like, this student choice initiative, and I put, like, air quotes around choice, because it's not necessarily a choice. It's it is, like, putting the referendums that we hold on our campuses in jeopardy. And we've already chosen that we want right. to have these fees because we believe in supporting each other. So
right.
So it's a union busting tactic from the Ford government. And so what we're going to see with the student union executives next year is they're going to have to make really tough decisions of, do we stick to our principles? Do we stick to what we believe in? Or do we try to get the most, funding? And does this mean that the CSA takes in donations? Like, we don't know. Because the really important aspect of the CSA's fee, and just, like, fees for any organization, is because it comes directly from the membership. So all the undergraduate students are members of the CSA. Mm-hmm. So it comes from their memberships. That means that there's no outside force that's telling us what to do. The university doesn't tell us what to do with right. our money. No business tells us what to do with their money. No external group tells us what to do with those funds, but rather it is the membership. It's the undergraduate students who tell the executives how to operate. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that through, like, services, but also, like, political campaigns. Like, our members tell us, you need to fight back against the Ford government and the OSAP cuts, because we put forward these motions at board meetings and we have open forums for people to come and tell us what they want to see from the CSA.
Mm-hmm. Before I follow up on that, you didn't like the changeover, but how do you feel now that you've sort of had to walk the walk? Was it a positive change?
I think a lot of people are going to get mad at this answer, but I still, like, I don't believe in hierarchies. I think mm-hmm. that's just, like, core to, like, my principles as, like, myself as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it through 2 different groups, like the first group of, like, last year, the 2017-2018, and then the 2018-2019 year. And I will say, like, one group worked with the hierarchy better than the other group, but I'm not going to say which one. But I think it's very odd because it creates a strange dynamic in the fact that, like, the president is, like, a great person to make decisions, but then also they're the person making the final decision.
Right.
And because there's 4 executives, if there's ever a split vote among the executives, it's the president who decides.
Right.
So it's really important, like, who is elected. The president is a really, like, logical, level-headed person with no, like, political or hidden agendas, but rather just, like, wants to help students the most, because I think that's the quality that you need to see in a president. I'm not speaking about anybody in particular, but I don't personally believe in hierarchies because it creates weird dynamics. And I think, like, the 5-commissioner structure, even though I never worked in it, I know as a student on the ground and, like, a student, like, going to class, that I knew which, like, commissioner to contact for certain issues. But now it goes to the president, and then the president will say, oh, well, that's a transit issue. It goes to VP external to talk about. So
right.
I think there's, like, less since there's less executives, there's less like there's more portfolio work for each executive, and there's like it's kind of still confusing of like who does what. So I would still vote no.
All right, admire that honesty. But to get back to student choice and everything, has there been any, you know, talk about how this is going to shake out? Because I remember the rally a couple of weeks ago, the VP of Student Affairs had no idea what, you know, and I assume that hasn't been, there's been so sort of no official release or anything, but, you know, do you have, from your researches and your outreaches, any idea how this is going to work? Choice?
Slightly. So the Ministry of Training, Colleges and Universities has released like a technical document to the universities, and the administration has shared that information with us as the CSA. So it part of the technical document is like what is considered mandatory and what is considered not mandatory, with a couple more definitions. And then as well, it outlines that like you can't bundle fees together. So this means you can't bundle like one group A and group B fee together to like try and like save one. It's like, for example, if like one is mandatory and one is optional, but they do similar work, you can't bundle those. So like that's an example of like the technical document. When it comes to like what we're going to see next year is going to be all up in the air. It's going to be a really shaky year for the incoming executives, because this has never happened before. There's never been a year where the funding is this unstable.
Right.
And this unpredictable, because prior it was always like, well, we have 22,000 undergrads, our fee is $17. So just do some simple math to figure out the numbers. And also our part-time students pay a lesser fee for the CSA since they are part-time. So it's just a bit of math to figure out what the fees are. But this year it's like, well, how many people attended this event? How many people have signed up for a CSA campaign? How many students are visiting the Bullring every day? So those are the kind of like things that we're trying to estimate of how many students will continue to pay into the CSA, because the larger question is how many students know about the CSA, and it's probably the same for all these groups as well, like how many students know about these different levy groups on campus, and how much reach do they have with the general student population. And we've seen in New Zealand and Australia similar like student union busting policies have been put in place, and they've retained roughly 30% of their membership fees. And they've actually turned into this like strange model where if you don't pay the fee, you can't attend their concerts, or if you don't pay the fee, you can't use their services. And that's kind of going back to what I was saying of like the executives have to make these hard choices of, well, do we stick to our principles or do we try to like save our own butts? I don't like, maybe not that term, but so it's like, do we continue to offer these great services for students that are free, but also continue to advocate for the students on our campus when not every student is a member in good standing, meaning that they've paid their union dues? So it's like, do we not let them come in to use to see a lawyer for free? And I'm with the principle of, yes, we should continue to help people as much as possible, keep it as free as possible and open as possible, because we don't want to go against our own principles.
Right. But, you know, there's a very real world quality to that, though, that, you know, in the quote unquote real world, if you want to take advantage of services, you have to be a member. And that is sort of, you know, the equal playing field that the student fees create, is that, you know, you everybody pays into the fees. And then everybody sort of gets access to the same services, whether you like them or not. And I would compare it almost to, you know, taxes, to property taxes. You know, I don't use every park in the city, but, you know, my taxes do, you know, cover the cost. You know, a penny goes to Margaret Green Park, a penny goes to, you know, however it shakes out. But still, it you know, there's a very practical consideration that maybe it is impractical to say you can use the CSA copier, even if you've opted out of the CSA fees.
It's like a really unprecedented territory that we're like stepping into. And I think the new team, I've talked to a bit of them, a couple of them about the what's happening, and they seem really firm on the idea that like we're for students, like mm-hmm. students in 1973, they voted because they knew that students needed a student union on this campus, so let's try to stick to that principle as much as possible by keeping things as accessible as possible,
right?
But what that means for the budget, we're unsure.
Right. No, and part of it too is, and you alluded to this, is the education portion of it. It's like, do people know what the CSA does? Do they know what the CSA mm-hmm. is? Could they name one of their CSA executive members, or even the member of their college board representative? And you know what happens, next September if there's no money to keep the Bullring open, and you know you sort of come back to campus like, I believe I'll go have lunch at the Bullring today. I don't know why I use that voice, but then the Bullring's closed and all of a sudden you're wondering why.
Yeah. I think like what we're going to see in fall 2019 across all Ontario universities and colleges is that students are going to be shocked at the difference of services that are available. And they'll be shocked at like how much that $17.55 fee that you pay to the CSA goes. Like, it goes a really long way. Like mm-hmm. we're a pretty large organization. We hire a lot of staff. We hire all the Bullring staff.
Right.
We hire all the service staff. We run a food bank mm-hmm. that feeds 500 people every week. Mm-hmm. We also have like a free lawyer that comes in twice a week to help students with their like legal landlord issues, et cetera, et cetera. And we also, because we have the executives of the organization too, we're also able to help support Fossil Free Guelph and book out space for their rallies and those things. And also we represent students like locally in municipal like political conversations and through transit, but also provincially and federally. So through our membership in the Canadian Federation of Students as Local 54, there's the numbering is getting up into 114. So we're one of like the really early members of the Federation. And through having a VP external, going to Federation meetings and being in conversations with the CFS, we're actually getting more in touch with provincial government and getting more in touch with federal government. These are connections I could never make within,
right.
even though I've been at the CSA for 2 years, I know without the Canadian Federation of Students, I would have never been able to be this involved with provincial and federal politics, because mm-hmm. they've already made the groundwork. They've already done the groundwork there for us. So that's
right.
another fee that is also optional, is our membership fees for CFS.
Mm.
It's $8 a semester, so $16 a year, but mm-hmm. you get a free ISIT card through it, which is a $20 card. It's a $20 value. So you're already saving $4, but the most important aspect of the membership in the Canadian Federation of Students is the political element. We're the only organization that holds the government accountable for not having free education.
Mm-hmm.
So these are like really important things I don't think students think about, because they're so busy. They're so busy with school
right.
and paying off their student debt and finding money to buy textbooks and also pay for their groceries and study well and go to class. Like, so students are the busiest people in Ontario. So they don't have time to think about these things. So that's why the CSA and the CFS is there to do it for them.
Right. It's a compounded issue, too, because, and I was talking to someone who used to do a lot of activism on campus, and this was back during the Mike Harris days. And I know you, being from Walkerton, have certain feelings about that name.
Yeah.
But the activism during the Mike Harris days was wicked. It was almost bordering on, I would say, abusive to the government. I think there was an issue of the Peak where there was like Mike Harris's head on a spike on the cover. And you're making a face. So it just, you are shocked. But I think what me and this other person were talking about was, you know, there's the student body over, and it would be generations. If you consider like a 4-year class, like a generation, mm-hmm. we're talking about almost 4 generations of students who haven't really had to get those juices flowing, those like really activists, like we have a real enemy at Queen's Park juices mm-hmm. flowing. And what me and this other person were thinking, it's like that's the real climb in this, is that students have been lulled into a false sense of security. And that's not necessarily that the Liberal government under McGuinty and Wynne were doing everything right, but they definitely weren't, there definitely wasn't the feeling that they were the enemy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this makes it doubly so because things are more, there's more pressures on students, education's more expensive, mm-hmm. which requires you to work more, which requires you to do more hours. And, you know, studies are very hard. I know that's very stressful. And I know that's the cause of a lot of mental health issues here on campus. And then now on top of that, we have this other thing that's, you know, mm-hmm. if you're concerned about losing a vital service, and I suspect there are a lot of people on campus who have used Shack or have used the food bank and recognize the importance of that mm-hmm. service and the couple of bucks that goes from their tuition to that. It's an uphill climb. It's, mm-hmm. it, you know, you're in order to rally the people, you know, I think there's this feeling that students are, for the most part, ready to radicalize, but I don't think it's been that simple.
No, and I think I agree. I think you're right. A good way to visualize like what's happening in Ontario now with like students and the student movement in general is like the analogy of like the frog in a pot.
Right.
So it's like if you put a frog in a pot of cold water and slowly turn up the heat, the frog will eventually jump out, but it's almost when it's too late because it's already like super hot boiling water. Right. Versus if you have a pot of boiling water and you throw a frog into it, they'll jump out instantly. And I've heard this like used in terms of like comparing Ontario tuition and Ontario students in comparison to Quebec students because mm-hmm. of the Quebec student strike in 2012, which people have been talking a lot about. They're always saying, oh, we need a Quebec student strike. That's what we need to do. We need to do exactly what Quebec did. Well, it took 5 years for Quebec to do what they did in 2012. It took 5 years of like mobilization and training and just even having conversations with students so that they knew what was going on. And I think because the Ford government and the austerity measures they've been bringing out have been so fast and like somewhat predictable, but also not predictable at the same way for, in terms of like timing of when they bring forward these suggestions and their policies and their like cuts as right. well. We're seeing that we had 6 months since the January announcement to like really mobilize, because September's really soon.
Yeah.
And over the summer we see like student mobilization dramatically drop because students are busy working part-time jobs to save up money so they can pay for tuition in September.
They're also not on campus
and they're
being
not
bombarded
on campus.
By it. Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah, so they go home into their communities. Like I used to go home to Walkerton every summer and it was like very sad because it was me just working minimum wage jobs. And sometimes go in and hang out with friends, but there was no like political engagement when I was away for the summer. So what we're going to see in September is a lot of students who are not ready to go. They're not ready for this discussion of a student strike. I don't think Ontario students are ready for a student strike, but they could be. And I think there's a lot. It's a good opportunity for the CSA and through other student unions to like take the time to mobilize students over the summer, do trainings, do phone calls. I've run a couple facilitation meetings over the phone, and it's that's the nice thing about 2019 is that we don't have to physically meet in person to talk about these things. I have meetings with people in Vancouver like over the phone, and we talk about just generally what's happening with the student movement in Canada. So that's the nice thing about 2019 is we can use technology to like help us mobilize each other, but we can't rely on social media to mobilize people. I always say that as a warning.
Yeah.
Is it's best to talk to people in person. It's best to have these conversations with people that you know and bring people to rally in the streets physically. Social media can only do so much. It's a great tool to organize, but it's not the end.
Yeah, you have to be seen.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the key. Has being sort of one of the people at the head of the student government, has that changed your perspective of your classmates? Like, you're still like one of them, but you're also, in a sense, a part, you know, up here on the second floor looking down upon them. I don't. But, you know, has that given you, like, any new insight into being a student?
Well, when I first started my term, or in 2017, I was still taking one class. Mm-hmm. So I would, you know, trek over to McKinnon every Monday, Wednesday, Friday to, it was a History of Mexico class, which was perfect considering we talked about the 1968 student like mobilization and year. So I actually wrote my essay on that for that class at the time. So it was really, really nice to actually like physically leave the UC and physically leave the CSA office to see like real students' faces on campus. And part of my like goal going into the CSA was to not lose touch and not lose touch with these students who are actually like going to class and have so much student debt just like myself. And I think like even just still having that student debt 2 years after being a full-time student, that like it, that still keeps me in touch with reality. And as well, like I've been blessed to be able to work with so many different students through like United Against Oppression, which is an OPIRG action group, as well as Fossil Free Guelph, another OPIRG action group, but also just talking to students through tabling in the UC about the campaigns. There's so many students I talk to about free education, and it's so great to see their like faces light up being like, oh, whoa, I love this idea. I love this conversation. I think about this all the time. Now I can actually talk about it with somebody. So that's been like the nice thing about my position as VP External running the campaigns is that it's part of my job to actually go out and talk to students. So it was great for me to like stay in touch because nothing's worse than a student union executive who's out of touch with students and just pushes through their things because they're thinking, I have 1 year, I'm just going to push through everything that I want to get done without talking to students. And I never wanted to be that person because I've seen it in the past. And that was part of like, I wanted to be really mindful and intentional on how I interact with students. And that's why I tried to do it at least twice a week when it came to tabling or even just, every night of the week, I go to a different meeting of a student group. So that's also really helpful to like know actual students and to talk to them directly instead of like through email or through social media.
Right. So has the job changed you? Because, I mean, we talked earlier about you'd still vote no on restructuring, but, you know, has the job changed you in other ways?
I don't think it has. No, I would say, well, partially no, but partially yes. Like, I think I'm more willing to do rallies and strikes than I was a couple years ago. Like, so yeah, I'm a member of the Young Communist League. So a lot of my like politics is still the same, like through the YCL. It's great to have like weekly meetings with them and talk about like what's going on to get my like dose of like real politics and not get stuck in the world of like university student union politics. But I do think like I'm more prepared than I was in 2017 to like run rallies, and I don't get as nervous when I have to speak in front of people anymore. So that's like a good change. But when it comes to my politics, I think I'm becoming more radical. Like, I think that like this chance for me to actually like talk to students who, there's some people who do believe that tuition is not high enough. So like it just boils my like blood when I hear people say stuff like that. So I'm getting more ruthless. I'm getting more gutty. I'm willing to call people out. Like so many people, or I was lobbying with politicians at Queen's Park through like CFS Ontario Lobby Week, and there were some MPs who said the Student Choice Initiative is good for communities on campus, and I said, no, you're destroying communities on campus, like fully calling them out for their, like, to be honest, like racist and homophobic ideologies of like these communities shouldn't get receive money because not everybody fits in these identities.
Right.
And like, I think that's really false. So I'm willing to like call people out more, especially some university admin when needed. But I will say, like, they have been really respectful. They haven't been ageist, but I have experienced that in my term. I've experienced a lot of sexism in my term as well. But I will say, like, as a white cis woman, that's like I'm very fortunate in the way that like I still have a lot of privilege in spaces.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to use that privilege to speak up for other folks who aren't in the room or who don't have that privilege, and to say to decision makers, you need to consult the people who this is going to affect.
Right.
Like, this might not affect me, but I'll set you up with somebody who this will affect so you can hear from them directly, so I'm not speaking for them.
Right.
That was kind of a ramble, but I like have definitely seen that I've learned a lot and I've become more ruthless.
Who wants higher tuition?
Oh, businesses.
Really?
They want to treat education as like a business.
Like
as something you buy and sell. And
right.
And I've talked to some students and not a lot of students, maybe there's like 3 or 4 students who will say, well, if it's more expensive, the quality is better. And that's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of like myth busting. And by the time I talk to students of saying, well, no, actually, like the government used to support education and these institutions used to be publicly funded, then students start to turn around and say, oh, whoa, I don't actually have to pay 10 grand for my education for it to be high quality. There's so many countries around the world that have a high quality education, but it's free. So it's not always about the price tag. And I think that's what people get confused about in like capitalist society, is we think, oh, if it's expensive, it's better quality,
right?
When it's not necessarily true. And we also see people viewing public as a bad word, as a, oh, public is less quality, it's not as good, when I think it should be the opposite. Public is a better quality, and it's actually less expensive to run. So
So how about the reverse of what, you know, you've, or of how you change? Like, how do you think you've changed the CSA? Like, what do you leave behind, do you think?
I don't think I will know until a couple of years from now. Well, I guess, like, one thing that I'm very happy is that the person who is following me is a friend of mine, but also I've seen her grow from the first time I met her to now. So I'm excited to see her grow, and hopefully that the files on my computer and the files in my filing cabinet will be, like, of use to her, because I and the incoming executives as well. Like, the rest of them, I really want to see them shine, and hopefully I've, like, set some, like, groundwork for them to really come through and be leaders of the Ontario student strike, maybe in a couple years from now, based off of how we are going to see the Ford government continue to cut more things. So I, like, did actually get a chance to finish my organizational policy for the CSA, so people want to read that, it's pretty boring, but it speaks about our relationships with the city of Guelph and the university and the CFS. So that's, like, I guess, like, one really tangible thing. But I hope that, like, in a couple of years from now, people will say, oh, that Kayla, she did a good job, she ran that really cool rally that, like, really escalated some pressure against this topic. So I guess, yeah, my answer is I won't be able to tell until a couple of years from now.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing next? What's next for you?
So I'm happy to say that I have been elected as the national executive rep for the Canadian Federation of Students of Ontario.
Oh, wow! Congratulations.
So that's probably why I've mentioned them a lot, because I see the CFS is a really valuable organization and a valuable tool for students in Ontario to connect and unite and fight back against austerity measures through the Ford government. So I will be moving to Toronto, which is pretty exciting because it will be the biggest city I've ever lived in.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be working out of the Toronto office there. Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah. So
I take it you're finished your degree?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wish you good luck then, and keep fighting the good fight. And I think a lot of people will miss you around here. And you've been on the podcast so many times. I will miss you around here. So I appreciate you giving me your time over the years.
Oh no, thank you for always inviting me and asking good questions, because it's always fun to see what you know. And and also shout out to CFRU for letting us use their space. And
yes,
I've been on Radio OPIRG several times with Mandy, and that's always been pretty good. So I'm a fan of radio. I listen to radio all the time. You could say I'm a radio head. This is a really bad joke, but no, I appreciate your time. It was good to chat. You know,
it was good to chat with you. Thank you, Kayla.
Thanks.
And once again, that was Kayla Weiler. You can learn more about the CSA at their website, csaonline.ca. And in a note of personal interest, you can still sign the petition to make CFRU an essential service and thus ineligible for the Student Choice Initiative at either CFRU or in various places in downtown Guelph like Royal Cat Records, The Beat Goes On, Yannis Books, and more. If you'd like to find out where you can sign a petition, you can contact Andrea, CFRU's outreach coordinator, to find a petition near you, and you can email her at outreach@cfru.ca. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics at Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. Check out Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico, and you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you very shortly. Until then, I will see you next time.